Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly programme that looks at all things technology related from a blind and partially sighted perspective, whether it's accessible, completely inaccessible, or somewhere in between. We'll be doing our best to talk about it. And if you've got anything that you want to share, any comments or suggestions or feedback, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week we'll be hearing how blind photographer Gary Williamson is using Sony products to help him capture his photos. Hubert Pavalkovich shows us how the popular game Dice World works. And we'll be getting a little preview of RNIB's upcoming tech fair in Northern Ireland. Joining me this week, Hubert, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Welcome to all of you. Let's see what's going on with you guys this week. Hubert, I'll start with you.
So I've been using my new Oakley Vanguard Meta glasses for quite a few weeks now, and I've seen that this talked about online as a very useful feature that I think, if you do have these particular model of Oakley Meta glasses, you should use. So basically what these glasses have, and they have the usual buttons, they have the capture button, they have the power switch, but they also have a third button, which is called the action button, kind of like you do have on kind of iPhone 15 and above, where you can customize that button to do different things. You can make it do whatever you want, pretty much. And I've seen a YouTuber demonstrating this, saying, you know, most blind and partially sighted users' Meta glasses should really customize it to, you know, give themselves easy access to their favorite feature. For me, I've customized it to ask Meta AI a question. The question I ask it the most, I find, especially when I'm reading menus or something I'm holding in my hand, is, what am I holding? So lo and behold, that is the quick action I set. So every time I press the button, it sends that command immediately through to my glasses, and they immediately take a picture of whatever it is I may be holding in my hand, which will then allow me to ask further questions. But I really quite like that. It's nothing massive, but it's that extra layer of customization that you can add.
I don't know. I would say that is pretty big. I mean, the one that I ask it the most. It's interesting. I don't really read stuff with my Meta glasses. I think I've said this before, because I live with someone sighted. I think when post comes in or whatever, my wife just grabs it and reads it. And most of the time, if it's post for me, it's probably not accessible anyway. So she just she checks every time, but she just opens it and reads it. So I think because of that, I don't really use it for that. But something I ask it all the time is, what product is this? Because if I'm grabbing something out of the fridge, or if we've got a shopping order that's come and I'm putting things away, I always ask. And that prompt seems to work really well. What product is this? And it will just tell me, 99% of the time, it will just tell me what it is. Or it will say, like, the image is unclear, but from the packaging, I read this. I assume it's just going off packaging rather than barcodes. But what I've found is that you can't do, like, what product is this? It will tell you. And then when it kind of starts again for another request to follow on from that, you can't then do, like, what about this one? It just gets stuck in a loop of telling you the one that it's just scanned. So you've got to do again, you know, what product, start it again, and what product is this? And then start it again, what product is this? So if I just assign that to the action button, that could be great.
It'll make life a little bit easier.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the loop thing, Callum, because I was ready to smash up my glasses into little tiny pieces a few weeks ago with frustration.
You're not having much luck with these glasses, are you?
No, I'm really not. Because I thought, having listened to you guys talk so fondly of them again, I thought I'd give it another go. So I've been trying for ages to get pictures and photos up my walls. And the difficulty is, obviously, I can't see. So I don't know what picture that I'd like the look of, that I want up. So there's a lot of waiting for other people to help. And the problem is, because they don't live here, they then don't get frustrated by the blank walls like I do. So it's been a very long and slow process. So I got a bit fed up and I got some photos printed and framed and everything ready to go up just myself. I thought, even if they don't work, I can change them later. And the thing that I was struggling with was knowing if they were the right way around or not. And I kept asking Meta, because I thought this would be a perfect example of put the glasses on, I can ask if it's the right way up, then I can put it up on the wall and then say, does that look right, kind of thing. And I kept asking, is it the right way up? And every single photo at every single angle was upside down. Didn't matter what I did. And I thought, is this, like you said, it was stuck in a loop. So I'd wait for the, how would you put it? So when you ask Meta a question and it answers it, it will automatically pause to let you answer another, sorry, to let you ask another one.
Kind of like follows up, yeah.
So I deliberately let that pause die to try and break the loop and then ask it with a new picture and a new question. And I was stuck again. And I was just going absolutely bananas. And my Seeing AI app was working and then decided to stop working midway through. It just said, we can't do this. I was like, that's
What about PickyBot? Have you tried
What's PickyBot?
PickyBot's an app that will describe pictures to you, and apparently it's really good. I've got it, but to be honest, I haven't really made much use of it. But apparently, from what I've read from people's views on it, PickyBot is really good at describing pictures in great depth. So maybe give it a go.
That is useful to know.
I use it for my video descriptions. You can get it to even describe videos, which I find quite interesting.
Yeah, you can. I've never used it for pictures, to be honest, just because I've got plenty of other apps that do that. I always just default to Be My Eyes for pictures.
Yeah, me as well, Callum.
But it's brilliant for videos. It's PickyBot. It's so good. They've got a WhatsApp integration as well with the idea of that you can use that on the glasses, but I've never tried it.
No, I haven't either, but I've heard it's really good. Anybody that does use it has said to me how good it is, how accurate it is as well. So, yeah, it's maybe worth giving that a go, Natalie.
You know how you spell it, Jackie?
Yeah, PickyBot.
VoiceOver will probably pronounce it Pixiebot.
Yeah, it
It
does.
tends to do.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll look out for PixieBot then. Thank you.
Yeah.
So just going back to that action button then, can you put any prompt you want in there?
Yes, literally. I think I've selected the Meta AI option in the action button. Then you write a prompt in the text field and save it. And when you press a button, it will just ask that prompt without me having to actually, physically ask it.
Ooh, that is very nice. Yeah, I like that. Jackie, what's new with you this week?
I have a birthday this week. So my toy, if you like, my new toy that's sitting on the toy table is the Zoom Podtrac P4 Next, which is a really nice little square device for recording. It has four inputs. It doesn't have a speaker, so you need to wear headphones if you are using it to hear the. It's fully accessible apart from the list of files. If you've got files on your SD card, it doesn't read those on the Podtrac, but it doesn't on any of the accessible Zoom recorders at the moment because the prompts are tagged. So this recorder doesn't have a speaker, so it's just headphones to listen to the accessibility features. But it is a really very tactile little device. You've got four XLR inputs. You can control the volume of each, and it's yeah. I'm looking forward to having a play with it. I haven't actually done anything with it yet, apart from put the batteries in. It takes two AA batteries, and you can choose whether you want rechargeable ones or alkaline ones or whatever. If anybody's interested in this device, Jonathan Mosen has done a fantastic review. It's really in depth. And it was really, I blame him that I wanted one of these because I thought it would be ideal, particularly for pairing, well, plugging in my iPhone to it and being able to record voiceover doing a demo, and the same with the PC, recording something on the PC with JAWS, it goes right in. So I guess it's kind of like a little mixer, but it's really compact, very tactile, and yeah, you can get it obviously from Zoom, and you can also get it from our friends online, which is where I got mine from Amazon.
I love that Zoom are doing this, going into these, like making these all of these recorders accessible. Because I think this is one of many now, because all the obviously Essential range has been accessible now, and now this Podtrac P4, which I remember a couple of years, probably more than a couple of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, this got a lot of traction in the blind community, but you did have to kind of figure out yourself how to use it, and I think there was a bit of guesswork involved for some of the things you were doing, like some of the sound pads and things like that. So, yeah, it's nice that that's accessible now. It's something that I don't really have a need for, but I kind of want to try it.
Well, I wanted something that, as I say, that I didn't want too many wires. I didn't want too much complication. I just wanted something pretty straightforward. And when I listened to Jonathan's review, I thought, yeah, this is going to be quite useful. So there is a Podtrac P4 out already, which is the one you're referring to, Callum. I think it came out a few years ago, and as you say, with no accessibility, you had to do it all by memory. And that's okay if you use it every day, but if you're sort of an occasional user, you would just forget the whole lot unless you wrote it all down, where to go, what to do with it. But this apparently is really accessible from the reviews and stuff that I've read. And I have to commend Zoom as well, because they are not only putting accessibility into their devices, but they're also making descriptions of each unit as well. You can download a little docs file, and you can read the actual description from a blind person's perspective. And I've actually got the information that describes the Podtrac P4 Next, and it's really good. It really explains the button layout and where it is. It tells you which way up to hold it, so that you know that you're on the right controls. It is really good, and I think it's commendable that Zoom are doing this, because instead of having to get sighted assistance to turn on the accessibility and the speech, with these recorders, you get the option to turn it off. So it starts talking straight out of the box. And anything that does that, I think, is just brilliant.
Yeah, well done for Zoom on this one, because it really is kind of feels like going above and beyond, that document with the physical descriptions as well.
I liked that for my Zoom recorder because it kind of helps you to make sure that before you press any buttons, you know what they are, which is fantastic. This device, I'm not going to lie, Jackie, I am tempted by.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I will give you some feedback once I've actually turned it on and started messing around with it. But you do need your own microphone, and you need a pair of headphones as well, because there isn't a speaker in this one like there is on some of the others. And that's because it's quite small, it's very portable, and yeah, I hope to have a bit of fun with it, and I'll let you know what happens.
Okay, we'll look forward to more on that. Natalie, what's caught your eye this week?
So I've got a mix this week insofar as it's to do with the iOS 26.2 software, which I'll confess I can't remember when that came out, but I updated my phone a few weeks ago, because I always leave it a while to give Apple a chance to sort any bugs they might have accidentally introduced. And two features I really liked, and one I'm less keen on. So to go with the positives first, I got a phone call the other day from a generic number that was probably a nonsense call. I think I answered it and then just hung up on it. And when I hung up on it, I got a pop-up on my phone that said, "Screen calling is now an option." So if you turn it on, what your phone can do is, if it gets a call from an unknown number, is it asks whoever's calling you to say their name, and then or say it presents it to you on the phone, and you can decide whether or not you want to take the call. But like Sky Talk Shield, if anybody's had Sky, I thought that was a great idea because the number of nonsense calls I get just seems to be growing exponentially.
How do you turn it off though? Because I've had this. We had somebody the other day at work who was asking every time somebody got in touch with them, they had to say who they were, and the customer wanted it turned off. So how do you turn off that screen calling?
I presume you'd go into settings and then phone, but if it's the same person, then presumably just add their number to your contacts and in that way it'd recognize it.
Either that or just as long as you've had some interaction with that number, like if you've messaged them or I think taking a call from them in the past counts, as long as it's kind of a known number. And it can even go off certain things like say there's a number, say you've been emailing with someone and there's a number in their signature, it wouldn't screen it because it would go, it's potentially this person.
And then the other side of this is if you call somebody, probably a company, let's be honest, and you're sitting on hold for a while listening to generic music, if you pull your phone away from your ear, so if you put it onto loudspeaker, or if you've got headphones in, a pop-up will appear that says, "Would you like a call back?" And what that means is you can effectively hang up, continue doing whatever you were doing beforehand, and your phone will then call you when somebody at the other end picks up. And I tried it and it worked. So I was very happy with that.
There's a certain instance where this feature doesn't work properly. I'll give you an example. Some organizations, when you call them and when you're on hold listening to their on-hold music, every now and again you'll get a voice going, "Thank you for holding. Be aware we're still, busy," that something like that. We will, yeah. If that happens, it assumes someone's picked up the phone. So be sure to always check because you get a little transcript of what the call is saying. Because sometimes it might assume someone's picked up, but it's actually just a voice, talking to you, making sure you're still on hold. So I've been caught out by that when I phoned the council once.
Your call is very important to us. You are now caller number 10 in the queue.
And then the final thing, which unfortunately is a negative, but I thought I'd make our listeners aware if they're not already, is the mail app. So I know a lot of people use bespoke apps like Gmail and Outlook, but if you're like me and you like the native iOS mail app, there's now a problem if you're using VoiceOver with attachments. So if you were writing an email or replying to an email or whatever, there used to be a little button that was called Expand Toolbar. And if you click that, it'd open up and give you insert photo, add attachment, scan text, whatever. Unfortunately, that button is still visible, but it's not accessible to VoiceOver. And Apple do know about it because actually I phoned them yesterday to raise it with them, and they are working on it. But equally, I said, "Oh, I'm surprised," because I thought, Apple are normally better at this, and I would have expected to hear something about it. And the woman said, "Yes, well, we've only had three people comment on it." And I thought, well, there's clearly going to be a lot more people than that who are actually affected by it, but okay. So I thought I'd mention it to listeners, and likewise say if you do encounter issues with this or anything else, the Apple email address accessibility@apple.com, if you email that with the issue, they should get back to you within about a week. And apparently that email address goes directly to the engineers, so the people who actually can address the technical issues we are having, which I thought was a good thing to at least get out of the call.
Yeah, I've used that address before actually. That one's been going for quite a while. And it is good to report things that are really annoying or you're not sure whether it has been reported. So it is good to do that. But when I have done it, they've written back and they've wanted step by step, and I've given them step by step, and then they've written back and said, "But we need to know X, Y, Z," and I'd already told them. So it can be a bit annoying because it's almost like they're either not interpreting what you've written in the email, or really they've just got their own, they're, I don't know, to say they're not interested is probably a bit unfair, but sometimes you just get the feeling that, they are pretty closed down. And we will be dealing with this in a future upgrade, but we can't tell you when. So that's fair enough, but it is worth doing because if you don't, you're relying on somebody else doing it and you don't know whether they have. And the more people that do write in with a bug, the more likely it is that they will take it up.
Well, that's the thing. That does sound frustrating. I've not had it this with Apple, but I've definitely had that type of conversation before with other providers of or customer help. But unfortunately, it is a numbers game. So when this lady said that there's only been three other complaints, I thought, I think this has been an issue for a while. It's the first time I've needed to use the feature, but I think this has probably been an issue for a while. And Apple's a pretty global product, so there's going to be more than just three or four of us affected by it. And I think in previous years, when they have released an update that's been fundamentally inaccessible in some other way, and the visual impairment community has, exploded on the internet, they have then responded quite quickly. So unfortunately, it is a numbers game. So even if the response you get is frustrating and annoying, at least the complaint will be logged and we might get somewhere a bit faster.
Yeah, always worth reporting these kind of bugs and these kind of issues. It really is. The more of us that get in touch, the more they'll hopefully prioritise it. So accessibility@apple.com, an email address well worth bearing in mind for any Apple products really, not just iOS. You can use this for anything, the Mac, the watch, basically, yeah, any Apple product. Well, another interesting week, as always, or hopefully interesting anyway. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's time to talk photography, accessible photography for that matter. And it is very much accessible. And how exactly is it accessible? Well, we're about to speak to a blind photographer as I'm joined by Gary Williamson. Gary, thank you very much for joining us.
Not my pleasure.
So before we kind of talk photography, what is your sight condition and kind of how much usable vision have you got?
My sight condition is Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, which is shortened to LEON. And basically, it's optic nerve damage. So it's not like an eye condition damage, which would be maybe corrected by lenses. This isn't correctable by lenses because it's an optic nerve damage, which I've had seen since the age of 18, so it's about 35 years now. And what I can see, the world's very much blurred, and with light and dark, and I see some colours, but I'm also with the condition I'm colour blind, so that doesn't always help.
So when you started with photography, how accessible was photography equipment when you got started with it?
I started as a sighted person at art college, and that's how I became interested in photography as photography, not just for taking pictures of things. And understood the storytelling and the art, but then very rapidly after that became like partially sighted, and so then it film was still around. We're talking 1990. Film was around for the next 15 years, very much so, and it just wasn't usable. I was taking pictures, but I couldn't really see anything. It was shapes and blurs, no matter how close I held them to my face or how big I blew them up. So I still took some because it was mementos. But that was it basically for a long time, which it was a loss. But then in around 2006, I got hold of the first digital camera and then plugged it into a computer screen and thought, oh my God, I can actually see where I've been. And that was just a basic camera. So it was basically doing everything for me, much like phones do today. So I could actually hold that out, point it in the general direction of the kids and take a photo. And when I got home from my holidays, I could see the image. And that was good because it was almost like, well, that's what they were talking about. And I'd have to remember and think, well, that's what they were talking about, but I can see Land's End now, or I can see that, whatever, now at the computer screen 2 weeks later. And with digital cameras coming in, it kind of then allowed me almost to think I can take a few more pictures. But it wasn't really accessible. It was, but you didn't need to be because it was just point and shoot. And then I started to go into DSLRs, and where it was more about the button clicks. And it took a long process of learning to realize that, you know, if you've got like a certain lens that starts at f2.8, if I wind the dial all the way to 2.8, I know how many clicks to go to f4, f5.6, f8. So I started to really work manually with the camera, kind of just working my way around it and having a block. Because, it's good if you've got a start and a stop. If things go around in a circle, you'd never know where the beginning and end is. So with a camera, where it was, I can get to the beginning, I can count clicks on for shutter speed, I can count clicks on for aperture, and I have some idea. So that's how I kind of worked into it, and just basically using my 20 times magnifier, but also for speed was learning the basics of cameras technology.
That requires quite a lot of memory, so that's quite admirable. We're going to take a jump now. So, you know, I've watched a video you have done recently. Tell me a little bit about the camera you currently use, because it's quite a big jump in accessibility.
It's a massive jump in accessibility. It really is. I think it just invites more people that have any visual impairment, no matter what kind, to either number one, get into photography, or number two, to continue photography. And I think that's an interesting market, not just people getting in, but those people who have contacted me and saying, I'm really struggling at the minute. So this camera really does keep people in photography or introduce people to photography, because the accessibility, whereas my old DSLRs were just all basically manual things that I could touch and feel, this has now gone into like talking. So if you've used a talking computer, the screen reader is perfect, that it's going through all the menus. And as you may know, you soon pick these up. When you've got a need in life, you said about having a good memory, but I think when you've got a need, you use it correctly. So I have a memory for things I need to remember. So things like the camera. So if I were thinking where's ISO or where's shutter speed on my camera, that menu now, I could probably turn the speed up, which is another good thing, because it can talk quite slow if you need it slow, but it can talk quite fast. And as you get more learned with it, you can actually go really quick with the camera, put the talking speed up and fly through it. But it's allowed me to search through the menus and find new things that I thought, oh, I didn't realize it did that, because you're browsing something with the voice. One of the other things I do like, it's still, because my eyesight's so bad, it does help, but it doesn't allow me to look at the back of the screen, is you can magnify the screen quite big. Now, I still have to use a magnifier because of my eyesight, but I did try that a few times and I thought, wow, that's pretty impressive. And it goes up in good increments, does the magnification. So it's not either all or nothing. It's small increment increases, which I found actually, I can see that being really useful.
I remember when I had cameras, a screen reader and camera, when I was about 10 years old, 11 years old, was something I could have only dreamed of when I had very kind of low but still usable vision. So it is really, really good to hear that, you know, cameras these days do have screen readers. What camera are you using? Are you able to name it for us?
It's the Sony A7C2.
Fantastic. Just in case anyone listening would like to find out more about it. Now, the other question I've got for you, what I like about photography is the use of cameras. You have a lot of people these days using phones for cameras and phones to take photos and videos, which is fair enough. It's one option. But, you know, you are someone that sticks to a good old camera. And, what makes you stick to the camera? What gives you, as a photographer, that kind of thing to go, actually, I don't want to use a phone to take pictures. I want to use a camera.
I'm not saying photography isn't on a phone, but to me, I were trained on a camera in 1990. And when you've had something in your hand that just feels correct, it's set up ergonomically, and the camera just feels correct. When you hold a phone, I always worry that somebody's going to knock me and I drop my phone, it smashes, or I can't find it on the floor. Them kind of things, the little things that all add up like that to somebody who can't see, and I have a camera strap, but having that camera in your hand, and the Sony one has been made especially so that the buttons are all different shapes and like convex, concave, lots of dials on them. But I find stuff like that really easily to remember. And the phone doesn't feel like that. You know, you're touching a screen anywhere. So again, a flat screen, when phones went from having buttons just to flat screens, it's a challenge. So to be able to go back to a device which is full of buttons and dials that can feel really textured in your hand, it's a pleasure. Photography with a camera is actually a pleasure. Bringing that camera up to your face and creating with it, and you're in charge, it allows you to focus and take a moment in life. When you bring a camera to your face, you take a moment in life to capture, you pre-visualize. I find phone photography, not for me, I find it more of a snapshot photography. And I know there's some people doing some excellent work with phones, but those people have thought about it and do pre-visualize and do use it in a more way you would with a camera.
And for me, as you said, there is that pleasure of actually having a device which has buttons, and you get that physical reassurance that not only the camera works the way you expect it, you just know that what you want to happen will happen as well. You get that kind of nice experience.
There's less guesswork. You know, it's is it focusing in the right place? I just understand having the textural feel of a camera. And I think sometimes I do, and maybe this is me being cheeky, but I do like the feeling that sometimes I've got my white stick out and I've also got a camera in my hand. And I like that kind of stereotype you're breaking down. I quite like that idea as well. So sometimes I do smirk to myself a little bit of that kind of feel. But also, I think I like to start describing myself as a photographer, and it's the DSLR or the mirrorless camera are the best tools to use.
One thing I love discussing about technology of any kind is the future of photography, or any technology really. So, you know, what are you hoping to see in the future of accessible photography?
I'm like you. I would never have thought of screen reader, actually. So that was pretty massive. And the magnification, yes, I could probably guess somebody might have done that. But the screen reader was pretty out there in some respects. But future-wise, some of the things I'd probably, you think, what would I bring over from phone? And might be some verbal prompts. As in, I could verbal prompts to the camera, and also maybe a bit more, but this would be tricky, but still some of the maybe describing the scene. So sometimes I do use my phone to on live video to describe the scene. I was on holiday recently in Europe, and I just held my phone up and stood in the middle of a plaza and said, please describe the scene, and moved my phone around. That was really good. It described the general scene. So maybe you know, it could describe the, like, say, focused on person or focused on cars. There's little things, but really, when we look at it, a camera's been built for years on the shape of the hand anyway, and it's just good that blind people, you know, are using more tactile anyway. So that's ideal. The screen reader's ideal. You might always want a bigger screen, but I think you don't need that with a screen reader. But yeah, I think probably just a little bit more AI with some scene description, possibly, is what I'm thinking. But, you know, what do you think?
I don't think it's too far away. I mean, if you look at what you've got now, I mean, if a phone can have, you know, AI that describes scenery, I'm sure a camera will have it soon. I mean, if a camera can have a screen reader, it can have these things as well. To me, I would love to see that, because I always loved using an old-fashioned camera. It has that appeal to it to me. It's different to using a phone. It's that kind of, A, it's device separation, and B, it's just nice because it fits in your hand like it should. And to me, being able to not only have a screen reader on a camera, but be able to then visually have some help with being able to, you know, look through your photos on your camera, browse them, and get even the most basic of descriptions would be a great starting point.
Yes. Yes, it would. Just one of the other reasons why I do prefer cameras is because I do a lot of me editing on iPad. And what I can do is bring the images easier from me camera to me iPad, a lot easier off a camera than a phone. And I know that sounds a bit silly, but it just the way I work, because the better files, people talk about, oh, this is amazing on a phone. And yes, it's a beautiful image. But when I enjoy editing. I think it's relaxing. I think a lot of the picture is done in editing as well. So I really enjoy that relaxed time of just sitting, having a coffee in a coffee shop and doing some editing on my iPad. And to me, that's best done from a camera. I've tried it on a phone and they soon degrade. The images degrade, the pixels come out, you've less been able to push the image around. And if you've seen my images, they're strong black and whites. which I just like that, the ability that a good camera really gives you when it comes to doing a bit of playing around and editing. So that's what I do, you see. That I think that's another reason why I do prefer, you know, mirrorless cameras, really.
You've mentioned one more thing which I need to ask you about because I'm really interested. How do you make photo editing accessible on, well, you do it on your iPad in this case. How do you make that accessible? How do you do it?
One of the big advantages of the mirrorless cameras is I love the files that come out. I usually put them straight onto my computer, share that with Lightroom, and then share that with Lightroom Mobile, which is a really easy task to do. Once I've done it, shared it with Lightroom Mobile, that's now available on the largest screen iPad. And that then becomes available on there. I then use three methods of magnification. And those are, I usually do the pinch zoom to make sure the image is looking through the images at quick glance. And that's the easiest one. And then I do the three finger tap zoom on the iPad, which explores all the iPad. And the difference between the two is the pinch zoom will only do the photo. The triple zoom or the triple finger zoom will actually enlarge the menus at the side because it's an iPad magnification. So that means when I'm going down to exposure, I can see what I'm moving the exposure to on that one. And this is why it might sound convoluted, but this is what I have to do to see the actual settings I'm doing. I have to do the triple click zoom, but to see the picture, I have to do pinch zoom. And you can do the two together. And then on top of that, I have the 20 times magnifier, which I also use. Which then obviously is on top of them two other zooms. Alongside that, I will also use the Apple Pencil, which has been, it's been one, a lifesaver in making things easier, but number two, it's made them more fun because it just feels really natural in the hand. And I use that for editing as well. And basically, that's my editing, and it's fun, it's easy. And I say it's easy, but it is easy, but it's everything's easy if you like doing it, isn't it? But I think it brings a real joy in seeing what you've taken out in the streets, back onto your iPad, and then you're taking that image and bettering it and showing it. And I really like that process. It feels, it's about being a creative. And just because I've got a visual impairment, it doesn't mean I can't be a creative. I think it makes me better.
Well, that is truly fantastic. I've certainly learned a lot during our chat about how accessible photography actually can be, and I hope people listening have also learned it too. Thank you very much, Gary Williamson, for joining us here to talk all things accessible photography on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and on the 11th of February, the RNIB Northern Ireland Tech Fair is taking place for its third year, this time at the Foyle Arena in Londonderry. It's the biggest showcase of the latest assistive and adaptive technology for blind and partially sighted people in Northern Ireland. And we're joined today by Joe Kenny, RNIB PR and Communications Officer, to learn more about what we can look forward to. Hi Joe, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi Amelia, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on. That's great.
So what are some of the exhibitors that people can look forward to on the 11th?
This has been such a great event. We've had this the third year, as you said. And so this time we've got a sight and sound technology. We've got Navi Lens, which are really interesting company to find out a little bit more about. We have got VisionAid. There's a local firm called PackFlat. And people probably have never heard of them, guys, but they've invented this amazing piece of technology that enables a blind person to basically cast their vote with a bit more accessibility. And so they'll be there as well. There's a load of local charities as well, like Guide Dogs will be there, Angel Eyes NI, Deaf Blind UK will be there. And then we've got a whole host of RNIB stalls as well. We've got the Products and Advice Centre. We've got the Reading Services team, Employment, Education and Children, ECLO. Everybody's there.
Yeah, it sounds like a really great opportunity to learn more about new tech, but also just get sort of an understanding of the support and organisations available for blind and partially sighted people in the area. And you've also got the tech surgery this year, which is very exciting. Can you talk us through how that works?
Sure, yeah. Well, this is volunteer-led, basically, and it's a wonderful little thing. We started it from year one, but it's grown in popularity, and basically what we're saying is, if you've got a specific question or a bit of a tech query, you can come along, ask some of our amazing tech volunteers to basically help you sort out your, maybe like troubleshoot a little problem you've got with your iPhone, your laptop or your iPad, or some other tablet. And hopefully they'll be able to give you, at least if they can't fix it, they'll let you know who can. And it's short kind of appointments, if you like, but just walk in on the day and the guys will be happy to see you. If you may have to wait a few minutes, not, I'm sure it won't be too long, but the guys will be happy to help if they can.
And this year is the third year. It's bigger and better than the years before. What are some of the best things from last year that you'll be bringing forward?
Well, I mean, since we started the idea of Tech Fair, this all came around, I suppose it was post-COVID pandemic, and we thought Northern Ireland needs a technology fair, a space, a one-day event where people can come and just find out about assistive technology and who sells it, who makes it, who provides it, how do you get started with it, how do you get training in it? Because as we all know, I'm blind myself, and I find technology empowers, if you've sight loss, it empowers you to get on and do things you want to do. Now, that could be something in the home, it could be at work, it could be, you know, something with the kids, it could be reading, so many things. And technology quite often is the key to unlocking independence and confidence. And we know that in RNIB. So what better way to bring all that kind of idea and that sort of narrative together than hold a technology fair, which is basically a big room full of people that talk about technology, and it's free to attend. Come along on the day. There's a link on our social media sites where you can pre-register just to skip all that, you know, who are you and where have you come from kind of stuff when you come into the building. But if you want to turn up on the day, that's just fine too. I would like to also say too that a massive thing we've noticed is there's a great social aspect to the events. It was apparent from year one that people just love to get together. And I find sometimes in today's kind of busy kind of hectic life, it's hard to get everybody meeting up if you're, you know, in the sight loss community to kind of meet each other. One of the biggest stories I think that came out of the previous years is people meeting up with friends they haven't seen maybe in months or years, just to say hello and meet over a coffee, tea, and catch up, as well as finding out about technology. And I think it's important too that we kind of emphasize, I find sometimes the word technology, it's a long word, but it's also a bit of a scary word for some people. Perhaps you've lost sight maybe later in life, and you just think maybe I'm too long on the tooth to learn new skills or to learn about computers and iPads and things. And I think events like the technology fair is our way of saying, look, whether you are an absolute tech whiz and know everything, or whether you know nothing at all and you want to learn about low-tech stuff like long canes or magnifiers or liquid level indicators, all the way up through to JAWS and Zoom text and voiceover and all that great stuff, it should be there. And I hope that you can get your answers to your questions on the day.
How can people book or prepare to come along to the event?
Basically on Eventbrite, we have a registration link on there. You can find that on the RNIB Northern Ireland Facebook, Instagram, or indeed LinkedIn if you're a LinkedIn person. But as I say, at this stage we've got under a week to go, so look, if you just want to turn up in the day, that's fine too. But if you want to skip the queue, as we all say, nobody likes queuing, do they? So if you want to skip the queue and head on in, you can pre-register, and that would be great. It's just so we know how many to expect, really. Just to say, for those guys joining us by public transport, if you arrive to the Derry Londonderry bus or train station, we will have a shuttle bus laid on to take you the rest of the way from the bus or train station up to the Foyle Arena in Derry. It's not far at all, but I mean, if you don't know the city, then it can be far enough, can't it? It opens at 10 a.m, closes at 4 p.m, and we'd love to see as many as possible there on the day.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Joe Kenny, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio, and we look forward to covering the event and talking in person with you there as well.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We've had an email come in from David, who's got a question about the glasses. He said, "Hello, I have a blind shell phone, and for some time I've heard a lot of talk about the Meta glasses, but I've heard they do not work with the blind shell phone. Do you know if this is likely to change in the future, and which phones do support the Meta glasses?" So, Jackie, I believe you've been in touch with Blind Shell about this one, just to get a definite answer?
Yes, I contacted Blind Shell because we've been asked this question at work as well from customers. So the word is from Blind Shell that the Meta Ray-Bans do not work on the Blind Shell Classic 2 because there are certain apps that they allow you to download, and Meta isn't one of them. Meta AI doesn't go on the Blind Shell 2, but apparently it does work on the Blind Shell Classic 3, which is the newer version, because you can download apps from the, I think it's the Aurora store.
Aurora,
so
yeah,
so you can actually use the Meta Ray-Ban on the Blind Shell 3, but not the 2. And as a caveat, while we're on this subject, you can't use the Meta Ray-Bans on the Smart Vision 3 either, because the Bluetooth version on the Smart Vision 3 is too old, believe it or not, to work with the Meta Ray-Bans. So if anybody has bought or is thinking of buying the Smart Vision 3, don't, if you want it specifically for the Meta Ray-Bans, because it won't work.
Okay, so it doesn't say on this email which Blind Shell phone you've got there, David, but basically, yeah, if you've got the Blind Shell Classic 2, then unfortunately, no, you won't get that. You won't get Meta AI, and therefore you won't get any connection to the glasses. But if you've got the Blind Shell 3, then you'll find it in the Aurora store, which is not one that I've heard of, to be honest, but it does seem to have quite a good selection of apps in there, and Meta View, or Meta AI as it is now, should be one of them. So hope that helps. Give that a go, and let us know how you get on.
Let's play a game, shall we, on RNIB Tech Talk. This app that I'm going to show you has been around for quite a while. I discovered it, I think it was one of my first games I discovered when I got an iPhone in 2013. And it's something that, at least in the blind and partially sighted community, is one of these game apps that people kind of come to, play for a bit, and then go away from, and then come back to it multiple times, just like I have recently gotten back into this. So I'm going to show you Dice World today. It's a very casual app. In the simplest context, it allows you to play casual dice games with various other players, or with computer-generated characters, or take part in tournaments, things like that. And it's quite fun. It's nothing complex. It's a casual bit of fun that you can kind of pick up, play for a bit, and then put down, and you don't miss all that much, but it's quite a good time killer, especially on a train, I find. So let's just dive straight in.
Dice World. Stopping Braille screen input. Opening Dice World. Dashboard. Heading.
So we start with a dashboard.
2045 bonus rolls.
2045 bonus rolls. That's basically in-game currency. Used to be called gold, and the basic way this does is that you get a bonus roll if needs be to help improve your score. I'll show you how that works later.
Wins 1,379.
So this is how many wins I have across my Dice World history. I've been playing this game for a few years on and off.
Losses 963.
963 losses, so not all bad.
Level 58.
I'm level 58.
8%.
8% completed.
Medals 104 of 205.
Then you've got medals, so your in-game achievements.
12 active games.
12 active games, this is how many games I've got currently going on, whether it's my turn or their turn.
2 free bonus rolls. Button.
You can get 2 free bonus rolls if you watch an ad. I've got loads of them because I don't always use them, so I don't need this.
Store. Button.
Then you can buy things in the store. There could be different kind of dice that you can buy with different colours.
Activities. Heading. Tournaments. Button.
Then you've got tournaments, so you can take part in tournaments, and the higher score you get, the bigger payout you'll get in terms of bonus rolls and things.
New game. Button.
Then you can start a new game, and that is where you'll have a choice of either playing random opponent, you can search for a username if you know someone's username, you can match previous opponents, or even play funny computer-generated characters. Some of these characters are inspired by well-known celebrities. There's The Hoff. And then there's Arnold or Arnie. Arnold, I think, which is, of course, inspired by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And they're quite funny. quite funny to play against. They're computer generated, so it's quite simple.
Social center button.
They do have a social center here where you can actually kind of message people and things like that. It's not always something that reliably works, I find, but it does work if it's there if you want it.
Your turn. 10 games.
So this is where you've got your turn. So 10 games that await me to make my move. And then below that, you'll have a list of games where you are waiting for people to roll. On the bottom side of the screen.
User profile. Button.
You've got user profile.
Medals. Button.
You've got your medals again.
Stats. Button.
Your stats that you can access.
Leaders. Button.
You can access various different leaderboards.
Game settings.
Add button. Game settings.
Help. Button. Help.
And help. So quite a simple app, not much to the kind of home screen interface. But what we will do now is show you a bit of a game.
New game. So your bonus threes.
So we're going to play a game of threes with a friend of mine. Now, the way the game of threes works, in a basic concept, you need to get the lowest score possible each round. Most numbers are worth their value. So one's 1 point, two's two, so on, so on. Threes are worth 0 points. So far, the score in the game is...
5 to -24.
5 to -24.
Chat, button, player 2 profile, Great Britain. They scored -30.
So you can get special combinations. I think if you get 6 fives, you will score -30 points. But it's a bit of a risk, obviously, because it may not fully work out. In this case, it has. So my friend has a very much lower score than me. So let's have a roll.
Roll, button, roll, dimmed. 1, 3, 2, 1, 4.
The best thing I can really do here is keep a 3 to keep my score at 0.
Bonus action, beer 2, button, beer 3, button.
Now, if you're wondering why it says beer 3, you can pick different style of dice, and I tend to pick the latest one I can unlock with my user level, so my dice are currently shaped like beer mugs, which is quite interesting, but you have other funky designs. I think the next one I'm looking to unlock is an ice cold mug. That's the name of it anyway, but let's tap the 3.
Bank score is 0.
So I've selected a 3 and says bank score is 0 because 3 is worth 0
roll,
points.
Roll, button, roll, dimmed, but 6, 5, 3, 4.
So we have another 3, so again, if I keep that, my score will continue to be 0.
Bonus action, bank score is 0, roll, button.
So my score remains at 0, but you can also see here...
Bonus roll available.
There's a bonus roll available, and if I was to tap that... It will roll again, so you get 3 rolls per round, but you can't get a 4th bonus one if you want your score to be a little bit better. It doesn't always work out, it's still a risk, but it's worth a try.
Roll, button.
But we're fine for now, let's carry on.
Roll, dimmed, 2, 1, 6.
So I can't get all 3s anymore, because I've got 2, 1, and 6, and I could technically get a bonus roll and see if I get another 3, but equally... I'd rather not get a massively high score, so I'm going to not risk it and just keep a 1.
Bonus action, beer selected, beer select, beer 1. Bank score is 1.
Take that.
Roll, button.
Roll again.
Roll, dimmed. 6, 2.
Okay, we've got 6 and 2, so again, I'm probably going to stick with a 2 and then hope we don't get a big number at the end.
Bonus actions, beer 2, selected, beer 2. Bank score is 3.
So our score's gone up to 3 for this round. In total, it will be 8.
Roll, button.
But there's one more roll.
Roll, dimmed. 5.
Ooh, we've got a 5. I'd rather not keep that, so I'm going to bonus roll this.
Bonus roll, button, bonus roll. 6.
Ooh, didn't work out. Right, we're going to have to take the 6.
Selected, selected, beer 6. Bank score is 9.
So now we've got a 9 for this round, added to my previous already existing score of 5. We're going to go up to 14 points, which will be... quite a big gap to my friend, but what can we do?
Bank 9. Button. Bank. Bonus rolls awarded. You just won Dice World.
That was our roll. We moved on to the next game I can do. This game is...
Back. Pig bonus with Seraph.
This is a game of pig. Now, the way the game pig works, you roll a dice. The score goes up in each round, and you can keep that score at any time. The whole point is to get to 100 first. However, if when it is your turn, you throw a 1, and let's say you built up 16 points in that roll, that entire 16 points disappears. But this is where a bonus roll can rescue you. So let me see what we've got here.
Back. 45 to 0.
45 to 0, so I've got quite a comfortable lead on this player, so I may not need a bonus roll. Let's roll.
Roll. Button. Roll. 3. Turn score is 3, 48 if held. Roll, 6. Turn score is 9, 54 if held.
Now technically I can try and roll this dice as many times as possible and build up a high score, but I don't really need to rush. I've got 54 points advantage, so I can just bank.
Bank 9, 54 to 0.
There are 6 dice games available on the platform. Each of them's a little different, but none of them are overly that complex. There is 1 for 24, which is kind of like 3s, but the opposite way. The higher the score, the better. But you need to keep 1 and 4 as 2 of your dice, and then it's the other numbers that also make a difference. There is also Farkle, which you need to get 10,000, but different dice have different kind of values to them, and you have to think carefully which ones to keep. And you also have Yahtzee and Ballot, which are a bit more tricky, require a bit more thinking, but equally they're not too exhaustive. And then you can play and level up and earn different achievements, different ranks, and different themed dice as well. There is a subscription for this game. You can pay 99 pence a month, and it will allow you to customize the sounds for each game, which I personally find quite fun. It's nothing that's major, so if you choose not to pay it, it's not going to harm you in any way. It's just something I quite like and I find quite unique. So yes, do let me know what you think. If you do play Dice World, I do, and my username is Hubert1996. That's H-U-B-E-R-T 1996. So you can always challenge me to a game if you wish. But that is Dice World. So let us know what you think. Do you play it, or do you have any other games you play that you like? Let us know. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
And that is just about it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for being with us. If you've got anything that you want us to cover, or any questions that we might be able to help you out with, or just any thoughts in general on what we've been discussing, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We always love to hear from you. We'll be back with you, same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavelkovic, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
See you next week.